nothing, I think, makes as much difference in a general sense, maybe not necessarily in a specific strategic situation, as people hearing stories from the people we serve, not from us.
Right. I know I enjoyed this. We just finished a survey finding 100% of libraries are deeply supporting e-government and the role they play. But the story, one of the stories, and there were dozens of them, that came out of that survey was something I would never have thought of since I'm not in a small rural place, but a small rural place that has a lot of Mennonites and Amish. They were talking about they don't have computers at home and they have to register deaths and births and marriages and stuff. And they have, and they come to the library and get it done. And I'm going, well, there's a community message that fundamentally levels the playing field for a community.
Yeah.
And it was, and I just thought it was a really nice story about how groups engage in society the way they want to choose to engage without being forced into e-government or stuff like that. So I just liked that story coming out of that survey.
And one, actually, this sort of a little sidebar to a couple of things we said is we can never, I guess it's a major point of communication, never assume that your message is being totally received, because I can think of a few times, and one time is when Stratford decided to introduce online voting. It was only because we made an approach to the city clerk and said, you know, how can the library help, that they thought about, oh, of course, the library can help.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I mean, the worst thing to do in the world would have been to fault them for that, you know, to say, oh, you dummy, why didn't you think of us? You know, but at least they did, and we were able to make ourselves useful.
We underpromote that the library has the professional talent, the wonderful staff, the technology, the long hours, and the locations to support a number of initiatives to make the initiative better.
And even though we feel like as though we're saying that constantly, and you know, how can they not have heard us? It's just true. They often don't.
Right.
And so it's the point that it's a matter of getting to them when the time is right.
So back to influencing for money. Any advice there on what is, like, I know that one of the truisms is don't ask for money during budget time. So, which is, you know, a rookie mistake. So what is your advice on how to build success on that?
Like, I don't know that I have useful advice, because it's also specific to each community. Like I don't want to refer to any examples in Stratford or any examples at Oxford County, because you know, it was all a matter of the timing and the individuals involved and you know, some of the techniques that are used, like you know, are sort of general, like trying, actually this goes back more to the credibility thing, getting the library to win awards, applying for awards and winning them.
It's not a bad thing.
Not a bad thing.
It's not egomaniacal. Yeah.
And both locally and provincially, you know, like I'm reluctant to. I won't.
Well, Sam, without putting words in your mouth.
Yeah.
You don't. Like you said, it's about timing. You don't get timing unless your ear's to the ground and you're talking outside of the library. And you don't hear about initiatives unless you're engaged with the people who are choosing those initiatives. So it's really about relationships, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't like the word advocacy. Like, you know,
I don't either. Yeah. I think it's about influence. Yeah.
Yeah. But more so about, for me, it's relationships.
Mm-hmm.
You just build. You build the relationships, and it's, you know, about building a better community using the library as a tool. The One of the aspects of asking for money is being aware of the competition, and I'm not sure that I did such a great job on that. Like it's a balance. I would never suggest saying that the library should be seen to be opposed to something that is being put forward in the community. Like let's say you're in competition with the police because they think they need a few more officers. It's important to know what the competition is.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm personally I think a bit weak on knowing exactly what to do with that.
Well, I also intuit from you that there's an important component of humility that buys you access. You often start questions with a little bit of humbleness.
Yeah.
But I've also seen Bill Clinton and Al Gore and others do that too, despite the fact that they're pretty strong egos and very talented.
You think that
works?
Well, it's partially my nature, but it's part of building credibility, and it's it might be a reflection of what I'm talking to you about isn't about building a better library. It's about building a better community.
Yeah. I also think it goes to our profession tends to be introspective and good critical thinkers, and turning that, it is a strength, but turning it into a strength when we're trying to influence helps that the humility actually can work for us. So I'm going to, before I go to questions from the group, and Kirk will come back online in a second to remind you how to do that, I just want to say any specific strategies and tactics that you wanted to talk about, Sam, before we open it up to our attendees?
One of the little tricks that I guess I use is, and one of my things I like to say is, has to do with credit, not borrowing money, but giving credit for good work. So much of what we do is based on partnerships. Libraries can't exist, can't do what they do without partnerships. I mean, that's just a given in my world. And the way to strengthen partnerships is to be very generous with credit. And that works with funders too, because when you're getting funding from somebody, it's a partnership. And so when something good happens, sharing the credit with the people with your partners, it doesn't cost you anything. In fact, it works to your benefit, because if you're seen to be generous with the credit, that's a sign of the humility you were just talking about. Well, gee, I couldn't have done it without. I compare it to that saying about smiles. You know, give a smile and you'll get back tenfold. Well, give credit and you'll get back tenfold.
The smiles really do work. I sometimes wish that I walked into libraries and they were, in some libraries, that they were as wonderful as the Starbucks that I go into every morning, who remember my name and smile at me and all that stuff. It's just so interesting. So I'm opening up to questions. Kirk, do you want to give everybody a reminder on how to ask a question? And then Kirk will introduce you.
At this time, I'd like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. And we'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster.
I don't know how long compiling takes. I know in software programs it can take overnight.
Hopefully not today.
Yeah.
Well, we do have one question in queue now, so it didn't take too long. But
great.
Before I open up that line, I'd just like to remind everyone again, if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. And your first question or comment comes from the line of Stephen Kraft from Guelph Public Library. Your line is open.
Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, Sam. Hey, we're here in Guelph. We have a question for both of you. We are going to be launching our first candidates forum next year in each of our branches with the local candidates and a board member in a roundtable discussion about issues. this is GPL's first foray into this area pre-election. Words of wisdom for us?
Well, my personal experience with, you know, trying to get the candidates to come to something is, you know, I wish you luck. I would think that your chances of success are greater if it's part of an overall, like, if it's not seen to be not just for the library, like if it's, done in conjunction with the Chamber of Commerce or the local creative community or the arts community or something like that. But you make me think of maybe the only thing about my library career that I like to boast about, or my library CEO career that I like to boast about, and that's that working with all kinds of different governments, liberal, conservative, and NDP, I'm happy to say that I was able to build a positive relationship with the representatives from all of those governments. So that's just to underlie the fact that we have to be seen to be nonpartisan. So we can't be seen to be supporting one over the other. Stephen, did you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think I'd reemphasize the nonpartisan thing, but I wouldn't say you're nonpartisan without also saying you're biased and what you're biased for. You're biased for your community, you're biased for knowledge, you're biased for learning, you're biased for advantage and disadvantage group in your community, whatever positioning your strategic plan is taking. But then I'd also add, going to Sam's point about how to make sure they show up and make it engaging, this works whether you're running a community forum or not, is the Read posters, the software that ALA puts out.
Mm-hmm.
Ask every candidate to bring their favorite book and that you're going to post a poster of them in the library holding their favorite book.
Oh, nice.
That's
and
a cool idea.
I think it connects. And, you know, you can say bring a children's book, bring something that's important to you, bring something that represents you, whatever. Then they're engaged with you first before they come. And it starts to build that it gives you your conversation starter. Tell me about your book. I'm a librarian. I have total credibility on you talking about your book with me. And then the second thing is, make sure that you've partnered with your local press. And I don't mean the, like, you know, the giant size newspaper, the Globe and Mail or something like that. I mean, make sure you get a photographer there and say the press will be there doing photo ops. These people are suckers for a photo op during that period. And if you have one of those pop-up blinds that says Guelph Public Library or whatever on it,
Yep. That's
what you take the picture of them in front of. There's a reason why Dior and Louis Vuitton are on the wall on the red carpet at every event. So if you want to get yourself permeated through the community, it may not be they mention Guelph Public Library or it's in the text, but as soon people who are visual learners are going to see the library logo on that thing. And then make sure that you're introducing them and that you're completely nonpartisan in your introductions, but that also you can be strategic in placing a library question in the audience with one of your trustees or one of your fellow members, probably not a staff person. And
and mentioning the fact that the library is the repository, you know, the people can go to the library to get information about the issues.
Right, and they're a community resource, and whatever question you want placed that matches your strategic positioning. And that way, they can talk about whatever they want to talk about because it's an open forum, but at least you've been a little bit strategic on it and not totally divorced from the process because you're an interested citizen too.
Awesome. That's great advice. Thank you so much, you guys.
Thanks, guys. Is there another question, Kirk?
There are no further questions in the queue, but again,
okay.
If anyone would like to ask a question, they can press star then the number one.
We have some wonderful talent with Sam on the line to answer your questions, but while we're Sam, did
yes.
you just become? Are you a natural active listener? I'm not. I had to go get training.
Well, I'm
what are the techniques you use?
Well, I wouldn't recommend this technique to people, but I'm deaf in one ear, so I really have to strain to listen. So I work at listening naturally,
mm-hmm.
and also the fact that I have a soft voice helps give the impression of listening. People have to work. I'm not sure how the dynamics of it works, but I think it is a skill you have to learn. Like, you know, some people, like I say, I sort of grew into it kind of naturally because of because of my physical condition. But you have to learn it, but it's not hard either, because it's so rewarding because it builds better communication.
And the other thing you mentioned that was important was aligning with their agenda. Now, I would just caution on that. It doesn't mean you have to agree with the agenda, but you can agree with the part of it that matters to you.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And it's not a matter of buying into the whole agenda, and it's not it's not about, you know, shifting your whole set of priorities to align with their agenda. It's a matter of identifying the aspects that where there is alignment and working on those. And when that's not really obvious, the whole bit about asking questions about, you know, what they're trying to do is an interesting can be an interesting process.
Right. Well, we certainly see that, like, you know, you see opportunities and stress points. So we can know, if we read the papers, that there aren't enough books available for the new all-day kindergarten strategy. That, and there's programming issues. That should be an opportunity for us to bridge the earlier stuff. The FOPA research shows that if your kid engages in story hour before they start school and in the kindergarten years, they get a 10 or 12% better performance in school readiness, and it lasts through grade 8. So that kind of soundbite aligns with an agenda, and we look supportive, we are supportive, of things can work. So it's looking at when there's a temporary or long-term squidgy in the community, that we get rid of the squidgies.
And I think part of it is, too, like, you know, like the soundbite comment like that, that works really well if you remember it at the time. But so often we walk away from a conversation and we think, oh, geez, if only I had said that. Mm-hmm. Well, with the wonders of modern communication, it's a lot easier to do something, to do follow-up now. Like, and
yeah.
I frequently would follow up a conversation with an email, either elaborating on something that I said, or you know, asking further questions so that I could, and I think that's an important, that can be a really good tool, because it turns a conversation into a start of a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, that's a good point about follow up. Ken Haycock always emphasizes the thank you note.
Yeah.
And business cards, and you know, any politician worth their salt. Load your business card into a database. Now you end up getting the robocalls, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. I find them entertaining.
At least you're getting calls.
Yeah, at least you're getting calls, yeah, from a robot. But when Guelph or Kitty was talking about doing that kind of stuff, making sure that everybody gets your card makes you more memorable.
Yeah.
And then you say, I want to follow up with you on something you said. And you've gradually built the relationships. And also, I think we need to remember, when this is political influence over this election year that we're coming up to, for municipalities and provincially, the province delivers up to 5 to 10% of your budget, and the municipalities are the biggest part of it. Interestingly, it's just as important to educate and influence the people who don't win the election as who win the election. Because they'll show up on the committees. They'll show up in the next election. So it's not gone for naught. And they could end up being appointees as one of your trustees. So, you know, building that relationship with them is we're not betting on horses here. We're building relationships.
I thought of two other things I'd like to mention, Stephen. One of which is the a habit I got into, which is of sending out emails. I often wondered whether or not people considered them spam. I'm not talking about the emails that I used to send to you guys, to the people and my colleagues in the library community, but it's the same idea. When I'd come across something in the literature and in, you know, online, wherever, what I'm doing, I thought it was really important to pass that along to people in the community whose contact information I had so that they would know. I mean, it's we used to have a term for that in library school, proactive something.
It's SDI, selective dissemination of information.
Right.
And
yeah.
I've benefited from your connections. I've learned stuff.
And that's had incredible payback over the years, both in the community, and I think it did a lot to enhance the credibility of the of the library. The other part of that is sort of related is the connections. I once heard Luther Snow talk about the asset approach to community development, and he made the comment that once you do a community mapping and you have a map of all the assets in the community, the next step is to connect them. And that's what he said. That's community development. And I sat there and I said, thought to myself, well, that's what libraries do.
Mm-hmm.
We connect the dots. And that's so important. And that's a really important role that we can play in our community. If we're doing our job and being aware of what's going on, what the agencies are doing, what their interests are, what their priorities are, when we find out that Agency X is really interested in developing a new youth program, we can direct them to other agencies in the community or provincially that might be of assistance.
Mm-hmm.
And
or we've got teen groups at CLA and OLA that have some interesting initiatives that could add some color to their project.
And that kind of making those kind of connections for people is part of the reason that the library gets more invited to more tables than it used to.
Yes, and we need to be invited to more, and I hope everyone on the call is going to be working towards that. We've got a few minutes left, but I just want to mention, if there's any questions, Kirk, just interrupt me.
Okay. We do actually have some questions.
Wonderful. Let's have it.
So your next question comes from the line of Alicia Kilgore from Fort Francis Public Libraries. Your line is open.
Hi, it's not actually Alicia.
No, it never is. That's why I didn't say hi, Alicia.
It's Joyce here. Since we in Fort Francis are sitting, we have three board members, since Alicia is involved in some training in the library. You've only in very passing moments there mentioned the trustees. And what can perhaps both of you talk about as to how we can become involved in all of this?
Sam here. I think some of the approaches that we've been talking about can be used by trustees. In terms of building those connections, it's important, I guess, for there to be the relationship between the library staff or the CEO and the trustees that they're getting the information that they need. I mean, you know, it's the board that sets the priorities. So the active listening component can be really valuable in terms of making sure that the board is aligning its priority, is building its priorities in consideration of what the community needs, and then letting the community know that's what's happening.
My personal opinion is that trustees carry a different, separate but equal community equity to librarians. One of our challenges from the library staff point of view is educating them with the talking points they need and asking them to engage their community. So Sheila at OLA and I have partnered on a Culture Development Fund grant to build a far more advanced four-year trustee training program that includes media literacy and stuff like this, so that we empower more of our community agents to be outward and inward focused in their role. And also FOPL is putting together talking points that we're going to be releasing on a monthly basis, and there's ones coming out shortly.
And what do you think, Joyce? You do a really great job of this up in Fort Frances.
Well, we've been trying to work on this really quite hard, and we've had some successes and some failures. I agree definitely that board members need to be knowledgeable about what we are doing in the library, what our plans, what our strategies are. And I frequently speak of the need for us to be always aware of those, the elevator speeches and what we can say in the community as true advocates. We definitely should be advocates. I liked your idea of connecting the dots. Sam, you've done that very, very well over the years, and I want to learn to do that better. I think we need to learn to do that better in Fort Frances.
Thanks, Joyce. Kirk, can we take another question?
Certainly. Your next question comes from the line of Catherine Rodney from Bracebridge Public Libraries. Your line is open.
Hello up in Santa Town.
It seems as though their line has been, has dropped out of the queue. If you would like to press star 1 again, you can rejoin the queue and I can open your line.
Maybe their lunch hour is over.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about if we went past 1 because people have desk duties and stuff.
Catherine Rodney, your line is open again.
Okay, I hope I'm here this time.
Hi, Catherine.
Okay, great. I have a board member sitting with me today, and our board is struggling a bit with their role, particularly during the election, with council members and whether they should be political or not, having one-on-one conversations with the candidates or even current council members. What do you feel is what they should really be doing at this point?
Well, I personally, the ability of the library to limit the activities of an individual are pretty small. Like, we have control over our staff, but we can't tell a board member you can say this, you can't say that, except as concerns the library. So on several of the boards that I've been on, that I've worked with, we have people who are quite influential in the community, and it would be ludicrous for me to even suggest that they not be political. It's just making sure that they understand the library's position. So if they choose to be political regarding the library, they will take the agreed upon approach.
Politicking, I think, comes on a spectrum, and there's being political, and then a more sophisticated way for trustees to feel more comfortable with it, where they don't want to support all the candidates or any of the candidates or maybe some, is to choose to be influential and educational and represent the interests of the library to everyone. And that is what's in the best interest of the library. And it's not technically political where you're supporting that candidate, but it's nice if the candidate who wins actually understands the library as a lever for community success.
And a caution, don't burn bridges.
Yeah.
don't ever assume that if you stop somebody from not getting elected, they won't be able to come back and haunt you. Mm-hmm. Anybody may.
And whatever you do, don't get caught smoking crack on your cell phone. Does that help?
I think so. Where it's really the one-on-one. Should the board members simply be spreading the library message, or should they be getting finding out what the agenda is of the individual council members, and whether or not the board should actually be involved in that sort of thing.
Yes, they should be involved in that sort of thing, and it's their role to understand the direction that your community is taking and bringing it to the library and advising the library personally.
And finding out the candidate's position is really valuable information.
And it's just listening. It's not agreeing or endorsing.
And the one-on-one thing, you know, I was thinking kind of like in basketball or whatever, where you have to cover your man. if each board member had a council member to liaise with and learn more about their role or what their concerns are and how we can fit in with that.
Right. I'm not a big believer in the elevator speech, but I am a big believer in a coffee and a donut.
Right.
And meeting anybody at Tim Hortons anywhere in Ontario. It's neutral territory, and you're just listening, and you're there in your community.
Right.
I agree.
Meeting off-site is smarter than meeting in the library.
Okay, that sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you. I know we're coming to the end of the call, and I know some of you have to get back or continue work. This has been work. This is important. I know I'm hoping that Kirk recorded the call, so we'll be posting it to the website next week. And I'd like to thank Sam Coughlin deeply and with deep appreciation for giving of his time today to give us his perspectives and insights. We really appreciate it, Sam. You're awesome.
Thank you.
And I just want to, because of a personal interest, congratulate Alice Munro on being the first Canadian to win a Nobel, first Canadian woman to win a Nobel Prize, only the 14th woman in history. I'm sure you've all put it on your Facebook pages and you're going to watch her books fly off the shelf in the next little bit. My son's running the Alice Munro Conference in Ottawa and helping to run the Alice Munro Conference in Ottawa in May. So congratulations, Alice Munro, a Canadian, won a Nobel Prize today. Awesome.
Yay.
So thank you all for joining us, and I look forward to seeing you at the webinar on October 25th and the next teleconference with Ken Roberts with a more big city urban perspective on November 4th. Thank you, and goodbye. Have a great day.
Bye.
This is today's conference call. You may now disconnect.